This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
If that won't wake you up, nothing will. That's Chuck Berry. A little bit of Johnny B. Goode there for you. I love that song. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am indeed Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy, Big Ed Davis, we thank you very much for joining us on this, wow, the last day of June already, Tuesday, June 30th, and it is on to July. In a few minutes, we are going to be talking with Nolan Gray. He's at the Mercatus Center of George Mason University, and we're going to talk about some policies that they have come up with there to help communities in their recovery from this pandemic. Very, very interesting points that they bring up, so stay tuned for that. And you probably heard about that abortion ruling by the Supreme Court yesterday. Justice Clarence Thomas, who was in the minority, it was a 5-4 decision, he issues a blistering condemnation of that decision to overturn a Louisiana abortion law. We're going to look into that decision and find out just what's going on with the Supreme Court. Also, two online streaming services are banning President Trump, his comments, because of what they call hate speech from one and hateful conduct from another. Wow, we're going to take a measure of what mainstream America thinks about all of this when we sample the barber poll, the only poll that counts, with its proprietor, Master Barber Andrew Ceresi. Stay tuned for that. And in our ultimate top 10, you may remember a few shows back, we did the top 10 most patriotic states. Well, turn about being fair play, we're going to tell you the top 10 least patriotic states in the United States. So stay tuned for that. By the way, Freedom Works, sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. It's located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580. Best haircut in Tampa Bay, I tell you, because it's true. Now, you got to make a reservation. You know how that works these days. So call 727-733-3773 to set up an appointment. The place is spotless clean, by the way. You're very safe there. 727-733-3773. And while we're at it, if you ever want to hear any of our shows, Big Ed sets up every one of them on podcast. And all you have to do is go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com, ourfreedomworks.com. And you'll see the podcast button there. And listen at your leisure. Okay, we got a lot going on. I can't wait to talk with Nolan Gray at George Mason University and some ways to help these communities recover from this pandemic. And I'll tell you what, it's turned everything on its head, has it not? So we will look forward to that. Speaking of the pandemic, scientists are now trying to understand a mutation of the coronavirus seen around the globe that some think could make the virus more contagious. Holy Toledo, that's all we need. Now, this mutation's even got a name. It's called D614G or D614G or G. Let's call it G for short. It's been found to affect the spike protein in the virus, which is the way that it enters human cells. It actually penetrates via a spike. Did you know that? So this Mutation affects the virus's spike protein. The more effective the protein, the easier it is to enter the host's body. Kind of scary. Research says the mutation, which changes an amino acid, might make the spike protein more effective, which will enhance the infectiousness of the virus. Wow. Well, boy, oh boy, let's get this thing out of us and over with, right? Very, very scary situation with all of this. Anyway, you can find more of it if you take a look online. I found this story in on the Fox News website. But it gets into some more detail about it. In the meantime, the Defense Department is backing up President Trump. Remember when they asked whether or not he was informed about the possibility that the Russians were paying a bounty to those Afghans that were fighting our soldiers in that war? Well, the Defense Department says there's no corroborating evidence to support that report. Now, that report came out of the New York Times with the old anonymous sources as a backup. Nobody knows who it really was that said that that occurred. The report, of course, just sent shockwaves around Washington, and it prompted Trump to outright deny knowing anything about the intel in that thing. So here's the chief Pentagon spokesman. He says, to date, DOD, Department of Defense, has no corroborating evidence to validate the allegation that was reported. He said, regardless, we always take the safety and security of our forces most seriously and continuously adopt measures to prevent harm from potential threat. Now, the New York Times had said some Islamic militants collected payouts from Russia. And I just wonder if there were payouts being paid, were they being paid also during the Obama administration? We never heard anything about it then. It does sound a little bit fishy to me. You know, whether or not that that actually occurred. If the Russians are becoming involved in that sense, it's, first of all, Trump should know about it. Somebody should tell him he's the president. But if it's really happening, I think we should reassess the way we're handling Russia and handle them even more delicately, you might say. Okay, let us do this. We're going to take our break, and when we come back, you know, with the pandemic raging, maybe getting into a second wave, we got to start looking at how these communities all across the country can recover, and that's what we will do with a guy from George Mason University, Nolan Gray.
Oh, well, I love you, Gallies. I love you, Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue, Peggy Sue.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting. Beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshew.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Let me tell you how it will be.
Hey, we are back on a Tuesday, the last day of June. Wow. 4th of July, I guess it's this Saturday, right? It'll be a little bit of a different situation, will it not? With all that is going on in all these communities around the country. And speaking of communities, we have Nolan Gray. He is a research fellow in the Urbanity Project at the Mercatus Center, which is located at George Mason University. And they are talking about policies to help communities recover as they move towards reopening. And Nolan, welcome to Freedom Works. I think this is a pretty interesting series of steps. Perhaps you can...
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, yeah. It's our pleasure, believe me. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about... Why the Mercatus Center and the Urbanity Project came up with this, and a little bit about what some of these steps are, if you might.
Sure, absolutely. So the Mercatus Center at George Mason University is an academic research center committed to connecting academic ideas to real-world policy. And so the Urbanity Division looks specifically at cities and towns and suburbs and how to keep them healthy and thriving and growing. And so, of course, the coronavirus has slammed a lot of communities. You know, in many communities, they face a three-pronged threat with the coronavirus of, you know, slowing economic growth, the potential for, you know, a pretty serious traffic boom after this thing ends if people maybe who had been riding buses or trains decide they want to drive to work. And then, of course, housing issues. You know, in some parts of the country, housing affordability was a major issue before the coronavirus. And now we've seen, you know, the relationship between the virus and overcrowding. And so there's new interest in a lot of these issues. And so we try to pull together some of the best research and put together actionable proposals for municipalities across the country.
Yes, indeed. And if I might highlight a couple of the ones that you have talked about, local governments should expand the kind of businesses allowed in commercial zones, expand what kind they are, and let local economies adapt to the changes in the demands after people come back out. Also about streamlining the permits that are issued. I think that makes great sense. And imitating, in Ohio, the Akron residential property tax abatement, basically freezing tax collection on new residential investments. Tell us about those three in particular, how they might work.
Yeah, well, you know, before this crisis, you know, a lot of retail was in a tough situation, right? I mean, especially with certain types of industries, you know, clothes, shoes, books, a lot of this has just moved online, you know? So a lot of these traditional, they call them power centers, you know, these would be your large chains like Sears or JCPenney or stores like a Barnes & Noble. So much of that business has moved online, and a lot of these, you know, former retail properties really are just sitting vacant. And so we wanted to look at, you know, what are some barriers to productively reusing those properties? Because in many cases, too, it's a very important part of the local tax base. You know, cities have planned out their finances on the assumption of those spaces being filled.
Yeah, indeed.
So, you know, we do make... Sorry?
I'd say, yeah, indeed. In fact, I'm thinking of a couple of box stores, if they were to close, and some of them are threatening to do so. You know, in these shopping plazas and everything, I mean, that is indeed a big tax base. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's a huge threat. And so we were hearing that from a lot of local policymakers. So, you know, we really sort of say, you know, you can't master plan what the next big industry is going to be. You can't sort of have a top-down approach to it. But if you clear barriers, you know, the market will find certain opportunities, ways to reuse these properties. So, you know, in a lot of cities, they have very, very strict use zoning, which says you can do this here, but not this here. So, you know, one of the examples we highlight is, you know, you had a town in Texas where in certain commercial zones, you could operate a restaurant, but you can't operate a catering service. Well, so if, you know, if I'm owning a restaurant and I'm finding that not enough people are coming in, I might want to switch my business over, at least for the near future, right, and become a catering service. But if the zoning makes that difficult for me, I might not do it. I might just shutter and have to lay off folks. So, you know, from a zoning perspective, we want maximum flexibility. And then permitting, too. You know, in many cases, these businesses, you know, a business owner and the employees might be ready to, you know, within 24 hours retool the business, but they have to go through, you know, a 6-month permitting review and have to have a public hearing. And, you know, unfortunately, we're staring here at a pandemic and then, you know, God forbid, a double dip with the recession. And we really need much more flexibility in permitting right now, especially. There's a lot of uncertainty, and really the way to respond to that is to maximize flexibility for entrepreneurs and business owners.
Right. Yeah, I think these are excellent ideas. And, you know, the fewer the regulations, as the Trump administration, even before the pandemic, was cutting back on business regulations, we saw the boom. It makes good sense to make it as simple as possible. These businesses are trying to recover, especially some of these smaller businesses, too, you know. So give them a little more flexibility, like you say. You also talk about, and, you know, quite frankly, I didn't think much about it, but the idea that once we are back on our feet, there's going to be a lot of people that who used to maybe ride subways or buses, group transportation, may just be taking their own cars. And you mentioned here about preparing for increased congestion that way.
Right. You know, there's a lot of unknowns here, you know, and a lot of people are understandably hesitant maybe to get back on a bus or to get back on a commuter train. And so, you know, you have a situation where in some towns, maybe 10-15% of people might, you know, otherwise take transit, but after this, they're going to have to come back to work, but they don't feel comfortable doing that, so they'll get in a car. So cities really need to be thinking seriously about ways to manage traffic. You know, one of the ways that a lot of cities have started to deal with this issue is essentially just a small $1 toll on the major roads during peak hours. And the goal there is really to try to incentivize people. You know, hey, if you can come into work at 8 a.m. rather than 9 a.m., or if you can come into work at 10 a.m. rather than 9 a.m., you have a very small incentive to do that. If you can't do it, that's fine. You know, and another thing that a lot of communities are exploring right now is improving sort of options for people. I mean, that's really the general framing in all of our suggestions is provide people with choice, provide people with options. You know, one of the things that's become really interesting is bicycle sales have gone through the roof through this thing. You know, I don't know if you've been by a bicycle shop here in D.C. where I live. You go by a bicycle shop and there's a line around the block.
Wow. No, I did not.
You actually cannot buy a bicycle. They're on 6 months back order or something like that. So particularly for people who live in cities where they might have taken a 2 or 3 mile or a 5 mile bus ride, if that person is willing to ride a bicycle, we can, you know, cities can do certain things to accommodate that. You know, of course, too, a lot of cities have also closed certain streets to provide extra space for families who want to get outside. You know, create a space where it's easier to get around by foot or bicycle for people for whom that works. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's going to really vary by local context.
So let me, first of all, we're talking with Nolan Gray. He is a research fellow at the Mercatus Center in the Urbanity Project, and the Mercatus Center, located at George Mason University. Are you getting the ear of politicians, either in communities or like federally or the administration? Are you going to be able to kind of talk with anybody about this, or are you just kind of putting this out and hoping that people will pick up on it?
Yeah, you know, we've been pleasantly surprised. We've had a lot of interest. I mean, you know, we tried to tailor this research brief in terms of what we're hearing from state and local policymakers. You know, we do We provide guidance for a lot of, you know, city council members, state assembly members, or we speak to, you know, public sector professionals and local governments. And so we've tried to tailor something that would be useful for them, and we're excited to say we're going to be talking to a lot of those people in the next few weeks. I mean, there's an enormous appetite for how cities can respond. I mean, they're on the front lines in many ways. They're feeling this firsthand.
You're right. Of course, they've got lots of things to worry about, especially in the major cities these days. Not only the pandemic, we got all the protests going on. I mean, things are really kind of grouping things back together. I guess, you know, do you feel that the communities are starting to respond to some of these things already, or are we still watching them kind of sit back? I mean, all of a sudden, we've noticed that there's been a little bit of a spike in the number of pandemic cases, and some of these cities seem to be cutting back a little bit, restricting people to even go into and operate businesses again. Kind of a wave, I guess. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say. I'm not an epidemiologist.
No, yeah, I didn't mean from that standpoint. But I mean, you know, the kind of the ebb and flow here of the communities and how they're handling, whether it's a second wave or, you know, just the increase. I guess that kind of relates to this whole thing about how to get these businesses up and running again and, you know, all of that. But, you know, in general, that's what I meant.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's a great point. I mean, I think a lot of people thought, okay, this is going to be a two-week thing and we're going to ride this out. You know, when we first went into lockdown, me personally, I was like, okay, all right, 2 weeks in the house, no problem. And here we are, right, approaching July 4th, Independence Day. Right, I think a lot of towns and suburbs and cities are realizing, okay, this could be, you know, another 6 month thing. And are we resilient enough to deal with that? Do we have the regulatory flexibility to support our entrepreneurs and business owners? Are we ready for a traffic surge if that were to happen? Are we, you know, allowing enough housing to be built? We're not putting regulatory barriers in the way of new housing construction. Because that was another thing that a lot of, you know, cities were noticing, and in a place like New York specifically, you had a lot of overcrowding, which was a function of just not enough housing being built because you had a lot of regulations. So that's another sort of area of policy that cities were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, too, these are reforms that would make sense regardless of if there's a pandemic, you know. Regardless of if there's a pandemic, it's a good thing to have more flexibility with regulations.
Indeed. Yeah, I think all of these things make good sense. I'm really struck with the idea that there are more bikes on the street. I guess if they're that way in Washington, they must be that way in some of these other cities, too.
Yeah, you know, it'll be really fascinating to see the data. And we don't know, you know, people might be riding them for recreational purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might be thinking of it as an alternative commuting mode if you live in a city or a suburb where that's possible. But we'll see. I'm sure it'll also depend on the weather, right? You know, it's creeping up to 90 here in D.C. this week, so I don't imagine many people will be riding bikes. But, you know, in the spring and the fall, it might be pleasant.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, Nolan, it's a pleasure to talk with you. I think some of these ideas are really terrific, and hopefully they get the ear of some of these community leaders, and they can take a look at these things, maybe enact some of these things as well. So thank you so very much for coming on.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and if anyone's listening, of course, we're the Mercatus Center, and we're always happy to chat with local policymakers.
The Mercatus Center at George Mason University, indeed. Thank you so much, Nolan.
Thanks so much. Take care.
All right. Nolan Gray. Very interesting. You never even think of some of these things, you know, as the communities come back, like whether or not people are going to take more cars rather than buses and trains and subways and the like. Anyway, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, Donald Trump's comments are getting censored both by, two particular streaming services for what they call hate speech and hateful conduct. Let's talk with the Master Barber about all of that when we return.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So Call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting. Beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcast Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen, and I'm the host of Good Morning Clearwater. We are found right here on the TAN Talk Network, 1340 AM and 106.1 FM, Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM. We will concentrate on Pinellas County and focus on Clearwater and Clearwater Beach. Weather, traffic, local and national current events, sports, trivia contests, and plenty of giveaways. We want to show the world why Clearwater Beach was voted number one beach in America. Listen up every Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM to Good Morning Clearwater.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's TAN Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. We are back. And I see Dr. Anthony Fauci is testifying once again on Capitol Hill regarding the coronavirus. In the meantime, poor Donald Trump. They're starting to try to shut down some of the things he wants to say on some of these streaming services. Reddit is banning the Donald along with almost 2,000 other online communities after updating its content policy to supposedly crack down harder on hate speech. In a blog, they explained the company's new rules, said that users of the Donald subreddit had violated the site's policies for years, says the community has consistently hosted and upvoted more rule-breaking content than average. And then there's a Twitch. I didn't know much about Twitch, streaming platform. It's owned by Jeff Bezos, who's not a friend of Trump's, you know, the Amazon guy. They've temporarily banned Trump's account for what they call hateful conduct stemming from some of his speeches. In particular, they provided the following example. When Trump was talking about Mexico during all of that illegal crossing, Trump said, "When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists, and some I assume are good people, but I speak to border guards, and they tell us what we're getting, and it only makes common sense. It only makes common sense. They're sending us not the right people." So they use that as an example when Trump was talking kind of, you know, off the cuff. So, Andrew, the proprietor of the only poll that matters, the Barber Poll, what do you think about this censorship of Donald Trump?
Paul, it's the election year, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
All the main media, what are they owned by? A bunch of liberals, right?
Yeah, Jeff Bezos is one
of
them.
They're hate speech. Why don't they get on Facebook? Why don't they get on Twitter and watch all the Black Lives Matters with their hate speech? That's okay?
Yeah, they're becoming, what is it, like Samson
Antifa.
Deciding? Yeah, go ahead.
Antifa, it's okay for them to say what they want. Kill the white people, do this. That's okay. I mean, but social media, I believe it's really going down the toilet, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
From what I'm seeing, I myself hardly even getting on it anymore because it's nothing but liberal hogwash garbage. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, look at what's going on now. The county commissioners are meeting today to see if they're going to close down the beaches. Paul,
Tampa Bay. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Now they're going to close down the Pinellas County. Let's break the economy, whatever it takes to get rid of Trump, man. Enough of this baloney.
Mm-hmm.
What you're seeing brewing, Paul, people are getting mad. Look at the gun sales last month, 107 million guns.
Well,
I mean, there's got to be a sign of what the future is going to bring, Paul. They keep censoring us, and they keep pushing us in the corner. We're coming out.
Yeah. No, there have been a lot of people that are arming themselves most recently with all of this chaos that's going on, particularly in some of these major cities.
Well, look at this week alone. On Facebook, the Uhurus in St. Petersburg are having a big protest in Dunedin on the 4th of July.
The Uhurus?
The Uhurus in St. Pete. Yeah, they're planning this. It's all over Facebook. And I'm really anxious to see what this is going to turn out to be.
Now,
the Uhurus aren't too nice of a crowd. You know?
Is that a black group, the Uhurus?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
they're
going to
do it over
affiliated. Over the 4th of July,
okay.
I guess. Saturday.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be in Dunedin. They've had the name of the street, so this is going to be good. I can't recall it off the top of my head.
That's all right. Hey, I want to ask you about the way, not only in Pinellas County, but also Hillsborough, which is our adjoining county where Tampa is, some of these other places where they have cracked down again. You got to wear a mask when you go in and out of all of these places. Now it's a requirement. Businesses would be fined if anybody, any customer is in there without a mask right now. And do you think it's a good idea, Andrew? Don't you think that it might make sense for just a little bit longer to mask everybody up, just because it might help to some extent reduce the transmission?
Well, you know, I look at it like this. I look at the deaths. I'm tired of hearing how many people test positive. I believe they're actually using mathematics to do these tests, where a negative plus a negative equals a positive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I don't believe all of this, Paul. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I really don't. I've known some people that have been sick, but nobody that is dying, you know, just the regular flu symptoms. I think it's just a big political ploy. And our local guy, even our governor, they got to go along with this because the people are so scared. They're like a bunch of sheep.
Yeah, Ron.
They're so afraid. I want to know how many people are dying, but I want to know how many are dying of cancer that day, how many are dying of a heart attack that day, how many are dying of COVID. They were not like, oh, we died of COVID-infected heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's a bunch of bullcrap, Paul.
Well, you have to admit, 500,000 people worldwide have been killed now, apparently, by the COVID-19 virus.
Okay, well, let me ask you one other question. Mm-hmm. 500,000 people throughout the world have been killed. What is the world population?
It's about 7 billion, I'm guessing.
Okay, so what is 500,000 next to 7 billion?
0.00001.5.
Okay, how many people die of cancer worldwide?
A lot more. Yeah.
Okay?
Yes.
It's a bunch of crap, Paul.
Okay.
And anybody who doesn't see it, as far as I'm concerned, is blind. They're nothing but sheep.
Yeah.
And that's why this country's falling apart, because at least 50% of this country is sheep.
I had your wonderful brother on yesterday. I don't know if you had a chance to hear, but we were talking a little bit about Donald Trump's chances to be reelected in November. There have been some people that dare say that that Donald might even consider not running and stepping back before November, which I, your brother said that's nonsense, and I tend, and I think
I'm going to say it's nonsense.
And
too,
I agree
buddy.
With you. I agree with you. But you know how they talk. Oh, the poll numbers are looking so bad for Donald Trump right now. The Republicans are going to form a little group, and they're going to come into his office and say, Don doesn't look good. Why don't you step aside? Maybe we'll take your vice president and make him the nominee. You know that. Kind
let
of
me
thing.
Tell you, if that was going to happen, I would tell Trump run a third party.
Because
he would definitely win then, too.
Yeah. But it's not going to happen.
No.
As we spoke yesterday, one of the things, and I mentioned this, and I think it's true, I think that they're not sampling correctly when they say that Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee, has got like a 12 or 14-point lead. I think they're oversampling people that are not going to vote. You know what I mean?
Well, they're going right in the middle of downtown Tampa with the mayor, Jane Castorated, they're taking a survey of all the Democrats. Come on. Just like Hillary Clinton, 92%, Trump at 8% in 2016. Do you remember that?
All I'm thinking about is the way you put it. It's Jane Castor. He calls her Jane Castorated. Just so everybody knows, she's the she's the lesbian mayor of Tampa. Go ahead.
And she's useless to boot. She was painting Black Lives Matters in the middle of the freaking streets. What a mayor, huh?
Yeah.
If I go and paint something in the streets, they'll have me arrested.
Well, you might get hit by a beer truck because they're not going to stop traffic for you.
Oh, it's ridiculous. To me, she's the most disgusting mayor other than Bob Blowhorn. And that's where she got where she was. So the two of them together, a good couple. But anyway, I really see the House being taken over with Republicans. I can't see people putting Pelosi and Schumer back in. And no, I don't see it happening, Paul. I think people are fed up.
Do you think, you know, you would think some of these people in some of these major cities would be fed up with their mayors. Now, they're all run by Democrats. Look what's happening in Seattle when they allow these people to take over a portion of the city, and then those people demand the ouster of the police while they trash the precinct itself. I mean,
you know, Paul, don't you think people there need to fight back, Paul?
Well, why don't they? I'm beginning this
because the American people don't have the guts that the World War II generation had, Paul. That's why.
Yeah.
They've been a bunch of sheep. They've been bred by these moron colleges. Okay, all these liberal teachers, you got a bunch of little morons running the street today that don't know what they're doing, living in their parents' basements. Give me a break.
Yeah. No, I think that's a goodly portion of it. But you would think that eventually they would go, you know what? Nothing's working in this city correctly, and we have high taxes. Let's get rid of these people.
You know what,
and
Paul,
fight back. Why don't they? And their
school
systems.
They want to stop all this stuff in the city. Stop welfare checks from coming in and see what happens. They'll have to go get a job. They won't have time to go do all this stuff.
Now, we've talked about the idea that the best thing you can do for inner city people is provide them an educational opportunity at a good school, which vouchers and charter schools, private schools, and that kind of
thing.
Well,
Paul, that would all work out great, but you see these little 10-year-old kids selling drugs on the corner making more money than their parents.
Well,
they say, why do I need an education?
Because the other part of that is to have the fathers be a part of the family unit. And when the kids grow up with a father figure, when they grow up with a father figure, they have a much better chance. Those parents will then see to it, hopefully, that their kids do get a decent chance with a good educational start. That's where I think that's the answer, but you go ahead.
Paul, 85% of the black population are fatherless.
I know, 80% or so.
80%, 85%. I mean, there's a problem there.
So when you mention, and I think one of the things you mentioned is pulling away welfare benefits, that will help bring the family back together. Because they two can live less expensively than one. They will.
Well, you know, the more babies they have, the more they get.
Well, we want to just, if we get pull away all of these things, you know, that are sent for free, it makes people more responsible. I don't care what color you are.
Well, this goes all the way back to Lyndon Johnson, 1964.
Mm-hmm. The Great Society.
You know what I'm saying? All the affirmative action and welfare. Right. And they wanted to keep these people uneducated. That was their own doing, Paul, so they can control them. And this is the end result.
Yeah. No, I think you're onto something with it. I just wish that we would finally wake up and enough people would stand up, particularly those in the black community, say, look, I want a decent school for my children. I don't want handouts. I want the opportunities. And the opportunities come with responsibility and, you know, vouchers, which give you an opportunity, a person an opportunity to get their kids going. Then we'll have generations of educated people.
Oh, that would be great. You got to get them to go to those schools, though, Paul.
Well,
they don't go to school. They don't even show up.
Well, that's because they don't have a two-parent family that are there to say, look, you're going to a good school. I mean, you know what I mean? We're getting back to the basic family unit.
Paul, I agree with you 100%.
You and I are getting back to the basic family unit. We all, when we start out, we all need that. We're given a sense of responsibility by our two-parent families. And I wish people would talk more about it, not be afraid.
Well, you know, Paul, I was raised up in an Italian Catholic family, okay?
Yes.
And when you make the sign of the cross, my father used to tell me this all the time. He says, remember one thing. When you make the sign of the cross, the first thing you say is in the name of the Father. Never forget that.
Yes.
Okay? That's just what he told
me.
And he's right.
He was. He was the head of the household.
That's right. And, you know, that's what's missing today. It's like you said, there's no guidance. There's nobody to kick the crap out of these kids like my old man did to me when I got out of line.
Right. Indeed. 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 Well, you make perfect sense to me. And it's always a pleasure to talk with you, Andrew. I'm going to look forward to Friday, which will, by the way, be the 3rd of July, the day before. Are you planning anything? Are you going to throw any firecrackers up in the air or anything?
Well, I'm going to have some fireworks, Paul. There's no question about that.
Okay.
I'm going to have some fireworks to celebrate my freedom, what little bit I have left.
Well, you know what? When you and I talk, there are always wonderful fireworks, and I always appreciate it. So I'll look forward to talking with you on Friday, my friend.
You got it, Paul. You take care, buddy.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
There he is, the master barber. Boy, you know what? Ed, when I bring up a topic, you never know where it's going to go with Andrew. He does speak his mind, does he not? You know? I'm glad that we can still do that on a program like ours, because there are so many places where if you dare say anything like what we talk about, you know, they come to get you. Okay, going to take our final break. When we come back, among other things, the top 10 least patriotic states in America.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best hair cutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is all.
Hey, everybody, this is Pastor Marcia McAllister from Beacon of Hope Ministries. We want you to join us on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock on this radio station for our two-hour show, talking to you about the Word of God, giving you great contemporary music, some lively chat, and just some food for thought. You'll be encouraged to know how very much God loves you and how He has a plan for your life. Join us this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock on Living the Good Life.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I took my troubles down to Madam Ruth. You know that gypsy with the gold cap tooth. She's got
a hat. Hey, we are back for the final session. Final version. The final session in our Freedom Works program with myself, Paul Molloy, and Big Ed. By the way, we're here every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time for your dining and dancing pleasure. Oh, here's something that just crossed the wire. The Supreme Court has struck down a ban on taxpayer funding for religious schools. 5-4 vote. This is that one that we had been talking about, Espinoza versus Montana. And the court essentially backed a Montana tax credit program that gave residents up to $150 credit for donating to private schools. And they can be religious schools. And it helps students pay for their choice of schooling. So John Roberts, who has been the main swing vote these days, authored the 5-4 ruling in favor of these programs there. It's a victory for school choice proponents. It certainly is. And some conservative religious groups who had challenged the provision in court. So that's a biggie. And I'm kind of glad to see that. It's kind of opening the way for these voucher programs to continue to expand. And these voucher programs are some of the best things that can happen in states like Montana and here in Florida for those in low-income areas so that they are not forced to go to the local public school, which in many cases is not helping anything and is not really educating them very well. In the meantime, I wanted to talk about, briefly before we go to our top 10, some of these monuments and statues that are being pulled down. And I came across this story from Helen Raleigh. She, by the way, despite her last name, is an Asian woman. And it was in the Federalist. And it's basically, if Washington, as in George Washington, can be condemned and toppled, none of you are safe, is what she writes. She says, the image of Washington's statue facing the ground after being toppled and vandalized in Portland fills my heart with sadness. The imagery originally set forth a wave of baleful nostalgia of a similar incident 54 years ago during China's Cultural Revolution. A prominent statue of Confucius was dismantled by militant university and high school students in 1966. So what she's saying is this freedom of speech, basically, by toppling people like George Washington and Confucius. She says, what drove the dictator Mao Zedong at the time to launch the Cultural Revolution in 1966 was his unquenchable desire to seize and maintain power. After his disastrous economic policies resulted in a three-year famine between 59 and 61 and an estimated 20 to 30 million deaths from that famine. So Mao temporarily retreated from the power center and let his relatively moderate colleagues take charge. But in 66, he was ready to seize the power again. And away they went, trying to demolish old customs and habits. And this is some of the things that she compares to bringing down the statues of Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and Andrew Jackson and even Abraham Lincoln. They're trying to bring his statue down, too. So, yeah, go ahead, Ed. Do you want to say something?
I was going to say, I would like to gather these people that are offended and hand them $120 bills or $5,001 bills. Do you think they'd take it?
The people that are offended by the statues?
Yeah.
Would they take the money?
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, what's the difference? They're taking down Andrew Jackson, who's on the $20 bill.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Why are they not offended but taking the money? And the George Washingtons, the $1 bills.
They got plenty of that. Yeah.
So they would not be offended. I would assume they'd say, no, I don't want that. That man is,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's getting to the point where if they're going to take the statues down, the next thing will be taking the pictures off of the currency. You know that. Lincoln, Washington. I mean, then we're gonna go and we're gonna try to deface the Declaration of Independence because it was written by a white guy, and the Constitution, white guy. So let's get rid of that because these people were slave owners and therefore, or some of them were, and therefore, whatever they say, you know, we can't trust.
Remember the good old days when you wanted something changed. You went down to the courthouse and you filed for a permit and you marched and you got signatures. Now you just throw a rope up there and yank it down.
I know.
Or you deface it with spray paint while the police have to stand there and watch it.
Yeah. And all you're doing is you're rallying the other side.
It really
is. You know, once you pull away people's freedoms, they start to value it and fight for it even harder.
Yeah, we said on the other show, the morning show, that if you look at the last month or so, the age of these people that are rioting, I'm not talking about the protesters, the rioters and the people that are pulling people out of cars and bashing in windows, they're kids. They're 18 to 25 years old.
Sure. Are you surprised?
No, but
you're not going to really see 90-year-olds.
It's really coming forth now because I think the real Black Lives Matter people, I'm talking about the real ones who protest calmly and without violence, they are seeing progress and they are laying back. The other ones are not about, they're saying they've got BLM out there, but they're not about that. They want to keep stirring the pot no matter what.
Right.
This isn't about that. And that's why I think I think we need to put a foot down and start getting some batons through
some local community business. Are you? Come on. You know, first of all, that those people in the local community business come from your neighborhoods.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, no. This is, it's ridiculous. Okay. Very good. It is time for us to go and do what I think is a turnabout, because we did do the most patriotic states. Ed, do you remember that the most patriotic state was New Hampshire? It was when we did the most patriotic. So we're going to do the top 10 least patriotic states, according to Wallet Hub, which compared the states across 13 key indicators of patriotism. So without further ado, the least patriotic states. Number 10. Illinois. Oh, it pains me to say that. It was my, for so many years, my home.
Too many people killing each other.
I know it. That's not very patriotic, is it? Yeah, things are going on there. It's very sad. It's a beautiful, wonderful state and the city. I want to see it turn around. All right, number 9. Michigan is apparently not very patriotic. They're up in arms to some extent, I guess, in some of those areas, like Detroit. And remember, they had all that problem with their water in Flint, Michigan for a while, too. But the governor of Michigan, is that the one that's been having that fight with?
That chick, yeah.
That chick, yeah. Now, that's offensive. You can't say a chick. That dame. You can say a dame.
The
that
former
dame.
Waitress.
There you are, the former waiter. That's better. Much better. All right, number 8. Oh, wow, this is surprising. This is a New England state. You thought they would be patriotic. Connecticut is not very patriotic. It's right next to New Hampshire, too. What happened? Didn't New Hampshire's patriotism bleed down to Connecticut?
They all moved there.
I guess not. Okay, number 7. New Mexico. Why is New Mexico not very patriotic? I can't believe it.
Does anybody live in New Mexico?
No.
I didn't think so.
Well, maybe that's why.
That's just the Area 51. That's
unpatriotic birds. Yeah. That's it. All right. Number 6. Would you believe our state, Ed, Florida, is not patriotic? Are you surprised by that?
Yeah, a little bit.
I am, too. I find it to be patriotic, from what I can see. Maybe we just have a skewed vision. I don't know. Okay, number 5. Another one surprising me. I would say West Virginia would be very patriotic, to be honest with you. And it's number 5 at least patriotic. I don't know why. They've got two things. They've got military involvement and civic involvement. And I guess that was the two factors here, military and civic, and West Virginia is not big on it. All right. Let's see. Number 4. This one really surprises me. Texas. I mean, to me, Texas would be very patriotic. They would have a lot of people from Texas that would be in the military. In fact, they're 11th in military engagement, but they're not in civic engagement, 49th. Let's see, number 3. The biggest state in the union, California.
Third. They had so many problems up there. That's,
apparently
that's the least of their problems.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, number 2. New York. New York, yeah. Well, they got problems there, too, do they not? All right, Ed, what do you think is the least patriotic? It's near New York.
I'll give you a tip.
It's near New York.
I was going to go with Texas.
No, we already said Texas.
All right, I'm going to go with New Jersey.
Roll the drum. Bingo. Well, New Jersey it is. So many people, you know, per square mile, they are the most congested state. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
Living on top of each other.
Yeah, exactly. All right, my friends. Thank you so very much. We will be back on Friday. Stay safe till then. And remember that freedom works.
Mustang Sally. Guess you better slow than Mustang.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF
FM 106.1
WDCF WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3.
Listen.
Bounty briefing. EU says no. I'm Mike Moss.
Democrats have gotten a White House briefing on reports Russia is paying the Taliban to kill American forces in Afghanistan. The House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff.
I find it inexplicable in light of these very public allegations that the president hasn't come before the country and assured the American people that he will get to the bottom of whether Russians are putting a bounty on the heads of American troops.
Correspondent Barbara Starr.
He will do everything in his power to make sure that we protect American troops.
Correspondent Barbara Starr with more from the Pentagon.
We have also learned that the National Security Staff had a meeting about the plot to decide and to begin to discuss some potential response options that they could eventually take to the president.
The European Union says it won't allow most Americans to travel to 31 European nations while the coronavirus is spreading rapidly in the U.S. And this morning, we are hearing from the CDC Director, Robert Redfield.
And embrace the universal use of face covering. Specifically, I'm addressing the younger members of our society, the millennials and your Generation Zs. I ask those that are listening to spread the word.
A comic legend has died. Correspondent Jim Roop reports.
Carl Reiner, one of the key players in Sid Caesar's Show of Shows that debuted in 1950. He went on to create the Dick Van Dyke Show, in which he played Van Dyke's character Rob Petrie's boss, Alan Brady. He's probably best known, though, as one half of the comedy duo of him and Mel Brooks.
What do you deduct?
I deduct my wife.
Well, everybody deducts their wife as an exemption.
Not as an exemption.
Well, as a deduction.
Not as a deduction.
And what?
As a depreciation.
Always a great straight man, Reiner was the backbone of many comedy sketches, films, and shows in his long career.
U.S. home prices rose in April for the eighth straight month, even as sales have been stumbling. The Dow is up 66 points. I'm Mike Morse.
Your Total Wine & More store is ready to serve you with our always low prices on an incredible 8,000 wines, 3,000 spirits, and 2,500 beers. Want it today? Try our same-day delivery or contactless curbside pickup at TotalWine.com. Whether you're mixing up a new cocktail or pouring a glass to enjoy an evening on the deck, Total Wine & More has you covered. Visit any of our four stores in the Tampa area.
Summer is open, and Lowe's is home for the 4th of July. This year, make your backyard the best place to be for the 4th, starting with the grill. Get the Charbroil 5-burner gas grill now, just $199. Then, fire up the eats and enjoy every bite outside with select patio furniture and outdoor decor, up to 15% off. Whatever you dream up for this 4th at home, visit Lowe's to make it the best it can be. Valid through 7-8 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Join Joe Pippin for Ask an Attorney Radio Show, Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. Ask an Attorney is Florida's longest running radio show for over 35 years now. So if you've got a question for an attorney, call Joe Pippin during his live radio show. Ask a question, get an answer, free of charge, of course. Saturday morning.